Good afternoon. This is Linda Galash, and you're listening to the August 12, 2011 edition of Catalyst Radio, the weekly program of the Community Media Center, as joined with our online citizen journalism project, The Rapidian. CMC's Catalyst Radio brings you interviews with organizations working on social change and community support, announces events and local efforts, and provides our media update about the media. Joining me each week to sift through the news is Denise Chang, and today our in-studio guest is Joshua McBride. Joshua McBride is one of the coordinators and organizers of Greater Grand Rapids Bike Coalition's Bike Stock 3. We'll be talking with him later in the show. But up first, it's our free speech and media news report, items that affect free speech. We start out with this one. The person who created RSS feeds, I believe that stands for a really simple syndication, and whose work later led to popular social bookmarking tool Reddit, was indicted last month on charges of theft. Aaron Schwartz, internet activist and recent fellow at Harvard's Center for Ethics, was charged with taking millions of scholarly articles from JSTOR, it's a private service, and making them available on the web free. There's a number of issues he's charged with, and Denise, go ahead and mention some of those and also define what JSTOR is.
So JSTOR is actually a service that a lot of academic institutions subscribe to. It's kind of like LexisNexis in a sense, in that you have access to a lot of different academic works for research, for citations. That is very exclusive, and you pay the provider a fee in order to access it. And the institutions that access it make it available to their students and their faculty to then use for their own research. So a lot of that content is protected and can only be accessed through some sort of financial mean. And Aaron Schwartz is very well known for really believing that information should be free. He started a group called Demand Progress that is very much focused on making information free. And he has been known among internet activists for that. So what he ended up doing was, among other things, he ended up sneaking into MIT with using a bicycle helmet over his face, and put a laptop in one of the computer's closets and set it up so that it would access the MIT's JSTOR account, download hundreds of thousands of articles, and then upload them to file sharing services so other people can access them for free. And it was doing it at such a high volume that it actually made JSTOR shut down MIT's account so that none of its faculty and students could access the service. And that is when the authorities began to suspect something was going on, and Aaron Schwartz came under investigation.
The fact that he was with an ethics fellowship at Harvard almost brings into question a little bit, was this an advocacy effort, or does this question his ethics? That's part of the discussion still in place, I would imagine.
Well, the person who actually is a center director, Lawrence Lessig, who is known for having started the Creative Commons movement, he actually felt that there was no problem with it. Like, how Aaron Schwartz may have proceeded in procuring that knowledge may be questionable in terms of him breaking in, but the principle behind it is something that it seems like is not for personal gain, and that is something that Lawrence Lessig said. You know, JSTOR realized that, and they were willing to let it go, while it's really the U.S. government now that's kind of holding those charges and keeping those charges going.
So the indictment, what exactly are those for?
The charges were related to wire fraud, computer fraud, and unlawfully obtaining information from a protected computer. And he faces up to 35 years in prison and a $1 million fine.
And our information on this piece comes from an article in the New York Times. Up next, a little bit about Wikipedia. Jimmy Wales, who was the founder of that, concedes that crowdsourcing, he says that crowdsourced encyclopedia, that's Wikipedia, is slowing in contributions and contributors. And he's saying the difficulty adding to the entries as a primary deterrent in growing the Wikipedia community. Denise, talk a little bit about that difficulty in adding to the entries.
The way that Wikipedia is created is actually not very user-friendly. It involves a certain type of language that you have to use in order to add entries, in order to make things appear bold or italic, to add hyperlinks for your citations on a page, and it's actually not very intuitive. It's not understandable if you're just coming to it and you don't really have any amount of computer savvy. And so it's something that's been a problem for a long time, and Wikipedia has said that they were going to change it and have been very, very slow in the last several years, actually, in doing so, and so much so now that they're finally starting to see the effects of it, that contributions are slowing down. On top of that, just on top of navigating how difficult it is even to add any information to any sort of Wikipedia entry, there's a lot of politics in editing on the site. There are people who are veterans of Wikipedia and who are very attached to their articles that they've contributed to, so that tends to play out and become a deterrent as well. And in addition to that, there's also a perception on the part of the public among, when it comes to major articles, that those articles are done and they're set. Even if they are still changing, the general perception is that that article is complete, and so people don't feel the desire to add to it because it's already basically been vetted by hundreds of thousands of people.
And just to clarify, Wikipedia launched back in 2001. Wales is one of the founders of it. The next piece has to do with a decision that seems to indicate that reporters do at times have a right to protect their sources, although there's no specific law that says so. A U.S. District Court judge has issued an order quashing a subpoena that was seeking to identify the reporter's source for information that he wrote about CIA and who it was that gave him that information. The reporter in question, James Risen, he's a reporter with the New York Times, and has also recently written a book about the CIA, and that is where the question has come in. The order was, a subpoena was issued for him to give up that CIA source who gave him the information on this book. But U.S. District Judge Leonie Brinkema, that she's at the U.S. District Court in Alexandria, Virginia, said that a subpoena is not simply a free pass for the government to rifle through a reporter's notebook. Basically, the judge was saying that when there is the ability to find this type of information through other sources, there is no compelling reason to force the reporter to give up the source. This one comes from New York Times, and that does wrap up our media and free speech news report. When we come back from our break, we'll be talking with Josh McBride about August 20th's event, Bike Stock 3.
We'll be right back.
Well, in the Catalyst Radio studio today with us is Josh McBride. He's with the Greater Grand Rapids Bicycle Coalition, and today we're talking about an event coming on August 20th. It's Bike Stock 3. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Encapsulate the event.
Basically, Bike Stock is a celebration of biking. It involves music and bike activities. We're going to have food and a beer tent and a bunch of bike vendors as well. And then bike polo will be going on all day. Bike polo is like polo, only on bikes. And we're going to be doing pickup games of that pretty much all day. Anybody can join if they want to. And we usually bring down extra bikes and extra mallets for that as well.
Okay. Well, let's get some of those basics out there. It's located, it's going to take place in downtown Grand Rapids area. Exactly where will it be?
Yeah, it's kind of tricky because we're taking over a parking lot. We had Rosa Park Circle last year, so that pretty much everybody knows where that is. This is going to be in the parking lot next to Bistro Bella Vita on Ottawa, just south of the Van Andel Arena. So basically, we have the parking lot in the adjacent street. There's going to be a bike race called the Grand Cycling Classic that's going to be going on around it. So we'll be in the middle of that race. So if you come downtown, look for the race, somehow get across it and come to the middle, and that's where we'll be.
Lots of bicycles then. So this starts at noon then? That's a Saturday, the 20th?
Yes, noon, and planning to go until around 9.
Okay. Well, in previous years, this being the third, there's booths, there's vendors, there's all kinds of stuff like that. Give an idea, besides of the location you described and bikes running around, what will be there, like number of tents, booths?
I think I've got around 10 booths right now. And then we'll have a vintage bicycle show that is sponsored by the Grand Rapids Vintage Bicycle Club. And then, obviously, bike polo, as I said before. And then we have 6 musical acts going on. So
you'll have a stage set up down there.
Yeah, I'll have a stage and a PA and all that stuff to keep people entertained while everything's happening.
So I saw on the list there's a bunch of local bands that will be playing. That can you name, give us an idea of who will be down there?
We got Delilah DeWild at 12, and then I think The Little Village, Chinook, Charles the Osprey, DJ Mr. Squid.
Looks like Posse's second.
Posse's second, yep.
So all those, some great local bands. That starts, again, you said, somewhere around noon and going on into the evening?
We're going to go, it starts at noon, and I'm trying to coordinate with the Grand Cycling Classic people so that the breaks between bands coincide with when races are done and they have announcements going on their stage.
Okay. A free event?
Yes, this is free. There's no money. The beer's not free. You have to pay for that, but that's usual.
All right. And then let's talk a little bit about all the partners you've had. You mentioned you have in this event. You mentioned the Vintage Bicycle Group. Then there's also the Cycle Race Group, the Professional Criterion. Is that what?
Yeah, they throw this event every year, the Grand Cycling Classic. This year is special. There's going to be a National Criterion Championship race at noon, which is why I'm starting mine at noon as well, just to kind of coincide with that. So that first, basically first 2 hours of the event, there will be a professional race going on in the circuit around it. And this is just to help them, you know, they want to have some entertainment while the race is going. And the other people that are helping out with this are the Grand Rapids Bicycle Polo Club, which they're going to be basically setting up their boards and all that stuff. I wouldn't be able to have bike polo down there without them either. So,
okay. And then you have also involved West Michigan Environmental Action Council, WEMAC. They're part of the beer tent effort then?
Or? Yeah. They've run the beer tent the past 2 years. They're doing it again this year. And all proceeds from the beer tent go to WEMAC. So that's a good cause.
Okay. Well, let's get into describing some of the things that, let's say you came down there somewhere around noon, good for kids, anything to do for kids?
Delilah DeWild is a good time, fun, you know, show. The Vintage Bicycle Club, basically when I was setting up this event, I wanted to bring back that feeling you get, you know, when you get your first new bike for Christmas or something like that, just an excitement about biking for everybody. And I had a feeling, you know, like if people saw people riding around on bikes and, you know, playing polo on them, that would be very interesting. You know, like a 10-year-old kid would find that very intriguing, I think. And then having vintage bicycle clubs, seeing all those cool, like, curvy old frames and stuff like that should, you know, give people that feeling of, man, I'd really like to get one of those. They look really cool, you know. So it's to get people excited about biking again, and it's designed as a family-friendly event. So,
and if somebody was somewhat proud of a unique bike they made but weren't a part of a club, come down and be a part of that.
Yeah, for sure,
as well.
For sure. Yes, if you have a really cool old bike, bring it down and we'll set it up with the show, and we'll have people watching those all day long, so you don't really have to worry too much about it.
Okay. Well, just to remind listeners, this is Catalyst Radio on 88.1 FM WYCE, and we have in the studio today with us Josh McBride. We're talking about Saturday, August 20th. That's the Bike Stock 3 event and some of the activities going on there. Josh, I wanted to get into a little bit about this being an educational and advocacy event as well, and just want to ask what kind of education efforts will be going on down at the event.
We'll have a couple of the local bike cooperatives down there. Motion Initiative and Boston Square Bikes are going to be down there, and they have community outreach programs that they do, and then they will have booths set up with information about that. The Greater Grand Rapids Bicycle Coalition will be down there with, I think we're going to have bike maps and stuff like that to kind of show you where the local recommended street routes are, and then we'll have speakers in between bands that advocate and educate people about bikes.
We've had Motion Initiative on the show before, and they deal a lot with youth and getting bikes in the hands of youth and take them out on trails and rides. What about the other group you mentioned?
Boston Square. They're quite a bit like the Motion Initiative. It was set up kind of to emulate that. They're not as big, and they aren't open as often, but they're located in Boston Square, and they take old bikes and fix them up the same way that the Motion Initiative does.
Okay. Well, you mentioned also something about bike maps and information that's available there. That's quite a prevalent topic right now, because there's the efforts to get more trails and mapping what's out there. Talk a little bit about the bike map effort that's going on.
The Greater Grand Rapids Bicycle Coalition has been working for the past, I think a year and a half now, to put together a newer, updated version of the old bike map that's been out for a while that will have recommended routes through the city for commuting. It'll show connections to trails in the Grand Rapids area. Basically, it's a commuter's best friend, trying to show them where you can bike, where the safest routes are, where the city would recommend you bike. We tried to stick to roads that already either have wide shoulders or already are marked as bike lanes and so on. And then also it is to coincide with the city's tentative bike plan. So a lot of the streets that are marked on the new bike map will become bike routes in the future if the city sticks to the way that they're expecting to go. So,
and the city has started and even completed a couple projects of complete streets. Mm-hmm. Explain a little bit about where those are and then what that means.
The first section was Lake Drive, which I'm sure people are familiar with by now. That's been around for a couple of years, from Easttown down to I think all the way to Fuller or Fulton. And then we have a section along Hall, I believe, that just went in. And basically a complete street is an effort to make the street usable by bike, by car, by public transit, and by pedestrians equally, instead of looking just at how cars negotiate it and pedestrians negotiate it. It's trying to bring every type of a vehicle that's going to be on there into the picture before laying down the pavement, so that when the pavement gets laid down, everybody has access to that street.
And then describe a little bit about what a complete street looks like, whether it's from lane markings or signage and all that.
Usually the ideal way to do it would be to have a central lane with cars. There would be a bike path or a shared use path on the side with with paint markings and probably signage by the side, and then the pedestrian sidewalk on the side. So
even the area where you're holding this event, about one street away, is Granville Avenue. That's fairly torn up right now. And there was a lot of talk earlier on when that project was in its earlier stages and even drawn out that that would be one of the complete streets projects. It's not now, but there was a bit of compromise. Can you talk a little bit about what was originally hoped for and then what that street will be?
What we originally were hoping for was a full complete streets conversion. That project was being planned and instigated during the bike summit, which happened in May. The city planners were at the bike summit, and then they saw all these great ideas and decided that they wanted to try and implement them as much as they could, which is very applaudable and awesome for them. But the Granville project was far enough underway that most of the planning had already been done, and they weren't able to go back into it and make it a full complete streets before construction actually began. So my understanding is that they're going to try and put in shared lane markings or sharrows, which basically is a bike with a little arrow on top of it along the side of that, as opposed to having a full bike lane. But it's always possible to retrofit a street into a complete street. It's not the ideal way to go about it, and it usually cuts down on the traffic lanes. So
we had Grand Rapids Mayor George Hartwell on Community Media Center's TV station a while back, and he had, I believe maybe during this time, the summit you spoke of back in May, was pretty much sold on it from my understanding, and did want to do that, and even asked the city engineers to redraw it. I think what came up a little bit at that point was then, according to the mayor, was that some of the businesses objected to the parking spaces that would be lost in doing that. So the compromise, at least that was possible at that point. Mm-hmm. And so it's another street that would be considered bike friendly with the sharrows.
Yeah. And it's very, very close to the Revision Division project, which is going on right now. And they had the same problems with parking. They didn't want to get rid of parking. So on the south end of that project, there is no bike lane. They put in sharrows in the same way. But that also, you know, in the future can be changed.
So Josh, since we're kind of talking about the efforts of Greater Grand Rapids Bicycle Coalition and even others, let's use the last minute or so just to wrap up with what kind of efforts are out there, and then give a little bit of information. Again, you got a website about this event. Let's just wrap up with all of that.
So the Greater Grand Rapids Bicycle Coalition has a website that has it ties you to most of the information about biking in Grand Rapids. It's bikegr.org. As far as the Bike Stock page goes, you can check out our page on Facebook. Just look for Bike Stock 3. It's all Bike Stock is all one word on Facebook, and you can join up, and there's volunteer opportunities there. The weekly rides that I know of, there's a bi-weekly ride for Pedal GR that meets, I think, at Founders at 6 o'clock. They require a helmet. It's a family friendly ride. They usually try and theme that ride. Wednesday evening ride happens at 9 o'clock every Wednesday throughout the year, and that's more of an urban ride. It's a little bit more relaxed. Pretty much anybody can join up, and it's meant to be, you know, no drop, so basically no one's left behind ever. And then the Motion Initiative also just started doing, I think, a weekly ride. If you look at their website, Motion Initiative, you can find out more about that. So
Josh McBride with Greater Grand Rapids Bicycle Coalition, and then go ahead and give us your website. That is a source for a bunch of this information and the event.
The Greater Grand Rapids Bicycle Coalition website is bikegrandrapids.org.
Josh, thanks for joining us, Catalyst Radio, today. And then again, August 20th, noon to 9, is Bike Stock 3. And up next, we look at some of the events in the community, starting with this one we mentioned last week. Tonight, starting at 7 p.m., is the second installment of the Peckage Park Concert Series, and that we talked about last week with our guest, Hugo Claudine. He's been organizing this to bring more community recreation to the Pocket Park located downtown. We have a link on our website for more information on that.
Also starting tonight at 7 p.m. at Calvin College's 106 Gallery is the Chicago Zinesters Reading Tour. Several small distribution magazine makers with experiences across the country will be reading from a selection of their works, which include written stories and comics. That'll be at 106 Gallery, which is on Division. You can find more information about the reading tour on calendar.diygr.org.
And then tomorrow, that's Saturday, August 13th, The Market, presented by Avenue for the Arts, is hosting the next edition of the recurring event. These always occur on the second Saturday of the month. Art vendors, musicians, and local businesses will be lining the sidewalk of South Division between Oaks and Cherry. The event takes place from 4 to 9 p.m., and photos, sculptures, paintings, prints, T-shirts, handmade goods, and such are available, and we do have a link on our website for more on that.
Also, on this Saturday is the Public Observation Night at 9 p.m. twice a month at James C. Veen Observatory in Lowell. The Grand Rapids Amateur Astronomical Association hosts public observation nights for a closer look at the stars, neighboring planets, the phases of the moon, and other things that the galaxy has to offer, provided that the sky is clear. Tomorrow night is the next observation night, and you can find more information at graaa.org.
Music featured this week on Catalyst Radio is the local band The Little Village, and that band is among those performing as part of Bike Stock 3. You've been listening to Catalyst Radio, your local source for independent information and news on the media. We broadcast weekly. It's Fridays from noon to 12:30 p.m. on Community Media Center's radio station, WYCE. Archives of Catalyst Radio shows can be found on our website. There's a couple places you can go to find that. It's grcmc.org/catalystradio, or you can get there through therapidian.org. Also at grcmc.org, you can learn all about the different programs and opportunities offered here at Grand Rapids Community Media Center. With Denise Chang, I'm Linda Galash. This is 88.1 FM WYCE, Wyoming, Grand Rapids.